Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap Q&A for June 13th, 2016. I'm Y-Rot, here alongside Relo T, or whatever assorted nicknames you guys have come up with us whenever you send us these emails.
And, all flattering, I presume.
We'll see about that. We'll see about that. And we're going to answer some questions today.
All the questions?
Well, no.
Okay. Some of the questions.
I have to go to work in a few hours.
A portion of the questions, then.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. We will answer a portion of your questions. But before we do that, we have to answer a portion of our own questions to one another.
So, Chris, my question for you this week is, what is a more annoying creature in your neighbor's yard? Is it a yappy dog, a whiny cat, or children? Just children, in general.
It's interesting to say that because I have, in my neighbor's house, yappy dogs, three chihuahuas, actually, and then I'm on the other side of an apartment complex, so I hear a lot of children playing. I've never in my life heard, like, a cat meowing outside my own house. Liam could be annoying at times, so I know that's irritating, but I guess I can't consider it annoying for something outside my house, because I've never heard a cat like that.
Right.
I think it's dogs. Children are annoying, but children know to fucking stop. Eventually their throat gets tired, or they get bored and do something. Dogs will just bark for hours at nothing. Like, I love Scotia, and Scotia's amazing because she doesn't care about these other dogs. Like, if we let her outside and the other dogs are there, they'll bark at her, and she'll just stand there and be like, I don't even know what you are. Are you dogs? Are you rats? I'm just gonna run around and pee and poop and leave. But the other dogs will sit there and bark at her for an hour if we leave her out there. Nonstop. And that's infuriating. It's not the worst. When I was at my old childhood home, they had a dog that would wake up. I feel like it woke up at 6 o'clock just to scream and bark, and they just let it outside. That was infuriating, but I think dog overall just wins it, because they're like inhuman terminators of annoyance. They just don't stop.
I've had to deal with both. I threw in yowly cat, just whiny cat, just because I know that can annoy some people. But yeah, in general, they aren't as persistent as either of the other two. I just know that some people probably find cats more annoying than dogs. Today, like, this entire day, like, my neighbors have just had, like, their grandkids over playing in their pool, like, all fucking day. I know if I go over there and I punch their kids in the face, then I'll get arrested, so.
Yeah, I feel like that would have some unpleasant consequences. But the thing that's worse is that you're trying to sleep during a portion of that time.
Yeah, because I have to sleep during the day whenever I work night shift.
Yeah, so that's definitely more annoying. Because I guess a dog, maybe because it's the same sound over and over, you can maybe just phase it out. But children will, like, fluctuate randomly in how excited they are at any one given time. So yeah, that would be annoying as shit.
Plus, they should know better than to make sound on fucking Monday morning.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's their vacation, so they're enjoying it, but yeah, fuck it.
Children don't deserve vacations.
It's one of my favorite Simpsons quotes of all time has to be just the one where Bart breaks his leg and can't go out and start vacation, and Homer's like, don't worry, son, when you get to be my age, you'll never get summers off. And, like, like, rubs his head and, like, leaves him like it was a comforting message. And it's like, good. I want all children to know that eventually that goes away and you just work every goddamn summer for the rest of your life.
How fucking lucky are you? Your job is to be taught things.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay for that shit. Fuck you. Stupid children. I'm going to be a great dad one day. Anyway, what's your question for me, Chris?
I have been preparing for a Boardwalk Empire podcast.
Okay.
And in doing so, I've gone through some seasons of the show, and I was reminded of a particularly great villain character that they had in season 3. So I wanted to ask you, Nick, who are your favorite television antagonists?
Well, if you remember back when we did a TA guy for Transmission Awesome, we watched The Chicago Code. I really liked the, it was, you know, it was a cop show that only lasted one season, but I really liked the antagonist of that show, who was like the mayor of the city. You know, this guy who had his own like criminal empire, and so he was very opposed to the police, but he had his own reason for doing stuff. He helped out his own home community, which was trouble when he was growing up and stuff like that. But he was also a very menacing character as well. So that's one that I liked. Let's see. I'm gonna try and avoid like cartoons and stuff.
No, you can put cartoons in there.
No. I'm gonna try and avoid cartoons.
Okay. Well, fair.
From what I actually watched, cartoons actually on television as opposed to just, well, time to catch up on stuff online. Azula's a great villain.
Okay. Yeah.
Avatar: The Last Airbender. She's a fantastic goddamn villain. I'll just stick with two, though.
Okay.
We got a bunch of questions to answer.
That is fair enough.
You have any... So, you reminded that because of Boardwalk Empire villains, though?
Yeah, there's a... Jip Rossetti is a character gets introduced in Season 3. He's played by Bobby Cannavale, who's... he's the lead right now in Vinyl, and he also played the cop in Ant-Man, the stepdad character. He's been in a couple other things, too. He's an amazing actor, and he played this character who's like... He's the way they phrased it in one of the behind the episodes, he's the kind of man who could find an insult in a bouquet of flowers. Like, the first scene he's in, he's having car trouble, so he hires a mechanic, and the mechanic's like, I need to get my 3-in-1. And he's like, 3-in-1, what's that? And the guy's like, you know, oil, what else? And you just see Jip's face, and he just kind of stands there for a moment. And like, 5 minutes into the dude fucking, like, you know, putting the oil on it, he's like, could have been a tool. What's that? 3-in-1. Could have been, like, a wrench or something. The guy's like, well, I didn't mean anything by it. He's like, nah, don't worry. I'm just pulling your chain. And then as the dude starts to walk by, he'll walk away. He just takes a tire iron to the back of the dude's head and just kills him. And I'm just, purely, like, you just insulted me in the most minor of ways. And it wasn't even intentional on your
end. And he apologized for it, too.
Yeah, that's the best part. He doesn't care at all. And the scene that I saw that just reminded me how much I love this character is he, again, because an absurdly minor slight he just presumed on someone else's behalf, he rages war against Nucky, and he takes over this town that essentially is like a linchpin city you have to go through to get to Atlantic City, so he just constantly intercepts all of Nucky's liquor shipments, and he takes over this town, he gathers everyone together into like the library, and he's trying to explain to them like, you know, we want to make sure you're all comfortable here, so we're going to be giving you a little stipend, and don't worry, just make sure you all keep doing what you're doing. Bakers bake, barbers cut hair, and nobody needs to know anything different's going on here. And, like, this one old woman, like, raises her hand, and she's like, will Bible camps still be happening? And he just has this great response where he's like, Bible camp's canceled. And this isn't really question and answers time, dearie. It's fucking... He just says... The best.
Everything's gonna be perfectly normal unless you ask a clarifying question, in which case, fuck you!
Yeah, you get the sense that if it had been a guy, he probably would have just strangled him right there. But he's just so eccentric and weird and hilarious. There's, in that same episode, he's like going through a tour of like their museum, and they show him like a mannequin of like a person, like a colonel that stayed there at one point. He has like the uniform and the tri-point hat on. And you just see it cut back to it later at night. And a hand smashes into the glass to take the hat, and you're like, I fucking know it's Jip Rossetti, you don't have to show it to me. And the end of the episode is like the guys on the beach loading stuff up, and Jip Rossetti shows up wearing the fucking Tri-Point Colonel hat, and everyone turns to look at him, and they're like, there's no dialogue from any of them, but you see it in all their faces, they're like, of course he is. Alright, well nobody comment on it because you're gonna be killed if you make a joke or say anything. He's amazing. One of the best. Just so fucking weird.
Alright. That was an interesting tangent, but let's get this started.
Let's do this.
I don't want us to only make it through 2 weeks of questions. We're going to start things off with an email from Aquaconda. Dear Nick, why roar of time? And Chris, roll out. The word asspull is thrown around a lot in the manga community. For anyone listening who is unfamiliar with the term, it is when the author introduces a new, unexplained power or plot twist or plot device without any foreshadowing. What is the most egregious ass pull you guys have encountered?
I feel bad. There were like three questions I accidentally missed when I was going through, so I didn't get enough time to think this one over until just now. So my answer may not be the best here. But one that comes to mind is in Fairy Tail, after they all like disappear for 7 years and suddenly have to get as strong as everyone else has had in 7 years, they just unlock an extra magic like space they all have in like chapter. No foreshadowing to it or anything like
they,
that.
They basically like, well, the Elder Guru is here in order to unlock your hidden potential.
Yeah, it's like, so you just got 7 years worth of training in an instant with no repercussions or consequences or anything like that? That's kind of horseshit.
I'm with you on that one. What's a good one? People already know how angry I was whenever they gave the explanation about old man Zangetsu really being the manifestation of the Unibok's presence or something like that. I was like, what? No! And then they, you know, went back on it the next chapter, and then they went back on that on the next chapter.
Yeah, that was frustrating. I saw people in the chat are saying Kaguya as well.
Let us tell you this legend of this one figure. Oh, you've had Fighter now, by the way.
Yeah, she's the big boss. Like, wait.
She's been manipulating everything for her the whole time.
He hasn't felt like he has, but oh, fuck it, whatever.
Oh, God. That's so pointless. God, what was that one thing that you talked about? I think it was in Seven Deadly Sins, was it? Like, the real...
Oh, no, in Katakyo Hitman Reborn.
Right.
Yeah, when they had fought through an entire complex and defeated the six funeral wreaths, and they get to the end, and the villain's like, now you fight the real six funeral wreaths, and you have motorcycles, and an absurdly complex battle system we use for three fights, then abandon, and you fight everybody in one-on-one battles, because fuck it, we had no clue what we were doing in this series. Yeah, the real six funeral wreaths is like a trademark moment of we had no clue what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Yami being Espadacero.
Oh yeah, that was absolute horseshit.
That was stupid. And it was completely pointless too, because you don't even see the fight.
Yeah, he just goes down off screen anyway. So what did it matter?
That definitely reeked a bit of something being forgotten, and then, well, I gotta get rid of him, so whatever. No, stupid. Okay.
All right, so we got a question here. It says, Dear Y-Ruler of Breaking Bad and The Walking Dead T, I wonder which generation of Pokemon is your favorite. P.S. You should add Sasuke to World Trigger to my heart back door so you can gain more viewers. I'll add him in here, and he just cries and bitches off, like, in the corner of all the sexy stuff. It's like every soft just cuts to him, and he's like, I'm still sad.
See, I was thinking that they were actually proposing, like, you know, get the Yaoi Vangirls in there.
Oh, maybe that's how I hit it up next time. Next time's an all-gay version of World Trigger to my heart and back door. My favorite generation of Pokemon is Generation 3. I liked the Hoenn region, I thought was really cool. I liked having a big new assortment of new Pokemon. I liked the aesthetics of that area. I thought that's where I think Pokemon had like the best collection of new designs outside of obviously Gen 1's great, but this is like of new Pokemon, it was the best, like from top to bottom, I felt. And I love that region and everything about it. It had so many cool areas and fun things to explore, and it was the only Pokemon game outside the first one that I went into completely blind. Like, I didn't look up any of what the Pokemon were beforehand, and that was probably a really defining experience of that part.
It's hard to say. Gen 3's got some really good stuff in it, I agree. But I don't know, there were parts of it that I thought were actually really disappointing. I think that they got a little bit too caught up in how everything was, like, regionally divided, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's hard to say what my favorite generation is. I've got very strong nostalgic feelings for Gen 2, because that was the one that I actually played the most as a kid. Is when I got the furthest, when I was actually, you know, playing it on Game Boy, and then I just kind of abandoned Pokemon for a long time after that before I eventually went back. Gen 1 is probably objectively the best, I think. Just because, I don't know, it seems like they've been adding new things to try and make things different from the first one when it was already perfectly fine to begin with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally understand it.
Gen 2, I mean, I do have very strong nostalgic feelings for it, but honestly, like, just now you play basically the sequel and you fight the remnants of Team Rocket, including their leader, Team Rocket Admin.
the ever memorable Team Rocket Admin. And their goal to tell everyone they're still around.
Although, I do really like the stuff that happens with Silver in that game. It's this complete dig, and then over time you actually see him becoming a better person, and they have this subtle touch where his Golbat evolves into a Crobat because he started treating his Pokemon with love and respect.
That was a brilliant addition, and he's probably the best rival character. I will absolutely give you that. Like, Blue's awesome and, like, hilarious in how douchey he is, but Silver is, like, just earnestly the best designed protagonist, or antagonist, yeah. Rival, whatever you want to call him.
Well, and the problem, like, because...
Well, I mean, after
because,
that...
Because Ruby Sapphire is just the other one of you.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that after that gen, most of them just tend to be your friends. Like, the closest one I can think is Gen 5, where Charon is kind of, like, he's kind of like the guy who's always trying to beat you, but always he's like, kind of like the inverse of Gary, where he's always trying to be one up better than you, and he's always losing, but he doesn't give up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you consider Wally kind of like a rival character in Part 3, but I don't even consider...
He's a secondary rival.
Yeah, too. I mean, you only see him... You only fight him twice, and one of them, mm-hmm. He has, like, fucking horseshit Pokemon, so it's like, you fight my Corellia, it knows Growl. Like, this sucks. You blow, Wally.
I just learned how to catch them.
Fuck you. You know how long it took me to find a fucking Ralts in these goddamn woods?
Alright. You can't be mad at me. I have asthma.
I thought you had cancer. I really thought this condition was so much worse.
Okay. Next up. No sign off. Hi, ruler of characters that are dead and never coming back, and Rollo Angry at Woodworking Podcast T. I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask. One, the heel face turn is a pretty common trope in shonen manga and anime. Frequently, from my own experience, taking the form of the main villain of the previous arc, turning into an ally in the next, maybe even a permanent side character from that point onwards. Of this kind of heel face turning, what is in your opinion the best and worst example of this happening? Well, I don't think I have a flat-on favorite, although there are some examples I think are very good. I think Vegeta's a classic example from Dragon Ball. People really, really like him, and he does actually get some really good moments after he just, you know, becomes a good guy.
And it also worked, too. They didn't just immediately become a good guy. Like, he kind of stayed as in, like, a third party for a while, and then eventually...
Years in real life, too.
Yeah, and then eventually he just starts to side with, you know, the Z Warriors.
And even after that point, he's just like, I just want to surpass Kakarot, you know.
Yeah.
But eventually he finally has that moment where he's like, you know, I've actually been a real piece of shit.
been a real, real see you next Tuesday about things.
Yeah. And then when finally has his big heroic sacrifice, like, oh, you know, this character actually has really come a long way. And it took him a really long time, so it's not like, friendship! I understand it now!
Yeah.
Gaara from Naruto, I think it's a really good example. Mostly just because of how effective that whole arc between him and Naruto is, you know, seeing the connection between the two of them, how similar they are. Gajio from Fairy Tail, honestly. Like, I barely remember what he actually did as a villain, but he became a much more memorable character once he actually joined Fairy Tail.
He was one of their better antagonists, too, I guess, because it came at a time when the villains weren't just instantly being defeated all the time, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when he did something at Zeus, you're like, holy shit, I really want to see this guy get his comeuppance. And again, it did take some time to kind of add everything together and him to become a full good guy.
Bad examples, Orochimaru.
Laxus is still horseshit to this day. That's another. That's
We're holding our hands up. It's okay now.
I didn't want to hurt you. Really? Because you had bombs set up all around us. Yeah, that's the one I'd probably go with.
Okay. Now, second question. Say that through some means, you somehow got cursed into being capable of only eating one dish from Food Wars for the rest of your life, and if you attempt to eat anything else, you'll die. What dish would that be?
Oh, Jesus. That's so sad. I'm, like, restricted to one food. Is someone making this for me, or do I have to make, like, fucking egg surprise and shit like that? Because I'll tell you right now, I'd be like, can I just make it into a fucking, like, a protein drink and just drink that? Because everything else is going to be so inconvenient. Like, I'm at a dinner party, I'm like, hey, can I use your kitchen to make my fucking eggy surprise, or else I'll die?
Let's just assume it's just, like, ready-made for you to eat.
Okay, it had to be something with meat in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to even think what they have.
Well, I actually did prepare for this ahead of time.
Okay, you go ahead. I'm going to look up the food.
Shout out to the Shokuyaki no Somo Wikia for actually just having a category of dishes to look through. It was very helpful when I looked back on this email to answer this question. So I have chosen the Kofta Kebab Burger, which was actually something that, like, I had completely forgotten about because it was made by Hayama during the fall election tournament. He used it to defeat Hisako. And basically what it is essentially a lamb and beef shawarma. And it looks fucking delicious. And it's, you know, I like, you know, pita-style stuff. So I think it would have been really good. Plus, you know, just meat.
Yeah, no, I can totally get that. I'm kind of looking at the roast beef frittata, but then part of me is also like, that venison roast that Tsukaka made. Tsukaka?
That's not Tsukasa.
Tsukasa, that's it. Tsukasa made, I think, that'd be pretty sweet. I don't eat much venison, though, so I'm like, I really hope I like deer as much as I'm hoping I do, because I'm trying to think. There's a lot of stuff in there that's beef, but it's a lot of, like, wacky. Maybe the pork bun. Actually, the pork bun might be where I go to.
I thought that was going to be your pick right away. Yeah,
I had to go through, and I think that after seeing that, I think the pork bun's probably where I go to. Because that does look pretty damn pimp. Plus, I can, like, eat it on the go. That's pretty handy.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Question here from Sedlick. Dear, why me sad and Rollo hold your hand part 3?
I like that.
That's a good one.
That's good.
Here's a question inspired by an episode of Super Larius Brothers. The two of you are on opposite ends of a map. You both send 3 to 5 characters from the regular series to attack and defend you. Which characters would you choose? So this is based off of the hypothetical me and my brother had, where we essentially draft horror movie villains, with the idea being like, alright, well, one team's goal is to essentially kill the other person. Mm-hmm. So who would make the better team? And my brother picked a lot of stupid picks. He had a lot of horse shit on his team. So that, I guess that same idea, it was a draft version of that, but that took a while, so I don't know if we want to go with that. I guess if you were like, if you had to put together 5 characters on a mission, knowing they're going to go up against 5 other characters, who would you want to go
with? Well,
it
says 3 to 5, though.
3 to 5. All right, let's go with 3.
Well, since it's supposed to be people to attack and defend us, I'm going to have Yuhabak as my defense, because he is the almighty and all-seeing, so he would see everything coming and be able to defend me.
I hope, like, the moment you draft him, he's like, and now begins my 9,000-year slumber. God damn it! God damn it!
What, did you not know what just died?
Didn't you get my Yuhabong giant sleep calendar?
It features me posing in very alluring poses. Mostly sitting in my chair, though.
Let's see.
I would, then I would have Osamu, because I know you would never be able to fight Osamu. And he would be my distraction.
I'd be like, don't hurt him! Zoro, stop! What are you doing? You can hurt him! He has a woman waiting for him at home, as Katara's all screaming. No, he doesn't! It's just in your head.
Ghidorah's like, I'm on your team, you idiot.
I really should have picked someone better than you. I'm sorry.
You're like, Kitora, no, don't fight him. You're supposed to just be banging.
What is happening?
Then I would have fucking Coco, too. He would just poison you while you're distracted.
Alright, so does it have to be regular series? Did he quantify that?
It says regular series.
For the regular series. Damn, like there's any JoJo characters. Well, put Aizen in there, because Aizen's a horse shit of a whole new caliber.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make Poison Coco think he poisoned us, when in actuality he's only poisoned Osamu.
You're like, no!
let's see, I need someone to attack. You know what, I'm just going to go with the raw badassness of Zoro. I just like to hope that he'll get through things. And then...
He'll never be able to find me!
You know what? I'm willing to assume he'll just find his way there eventually.
It says opposite ends of the map!
He'll eventually get there. He eventually gets where he needs to go.
It's be like, yeah, but where is this assassin coming from? Well, actually, he's heading in the opposite direction. All right!
And I'll have Alice as my defense, because I'm going to be killed anyway, so might as well have somebody making me some good food. Yeah, I might as well go out with a good belly.
Oh, God.
All right, good question.
All right, this question, no signature. Has a fictitious character ever had a large impact in your life, such as making you look at something in a different light, making you look back on your own actions in the past, or making you try to be a better person in the future? Yes? I probably. Like, I can't really name, like, an example that sticks out in my mind, honestly, though. I've never had a moment when I was, like, reading a series or watching something, I was just like, oh, man, I really gotta, like, improve my life, man.
I try not to make anything of my life, you know, contingent on whether or not an anime character told me to do it, but I would say there was a scene in Good Ending where, I forget the main character's name, but he's talking to, I think, the main female love interest, and she makes a note about how he's making things difficult for himself by overcomplicating and overthinking everything in the relationship. And that is something that did stick with me a bit, because I tend to be someone who overthinks things a lot, so that's something that stuck with me a bit. And I remember, this isn't manga I have related, though it's, you know, a video game, so I guess it kind of fits in a similar way, but after playing The World Ends With You, I definitely opened my mind up a lot more to try new things, since that was a big focus of the game, was expanding your world, because, as the title says, the world ends with you, so... It was a nice way to kind of say, like, you need to try new things and let the experiences happen.
I tried one fight in that game, and I was immediately like, no!
Oh, it's such a great game. It's so good.
I have some knee-jerk reactions to people who tend to like stuff, though. Or rather, to things that are beloved by a group of people, you know.
Yeah. Alright, moving on then. We got questions here from Tropical. Hello, Nick. Hands so delicate they can tell when a Pop-Tart is filled with chocolate, but fragile enough they get cut by glass particles. Insert something related to governing time. Freeman. In the spirit of not writing long email questions, I'll be splitting my questions per host. This one's for Nick. How can we not read it? What do you think about the idea that Kubo changed his mind regarding Byakuya's death after Asnote stole his Bankai during the final invasion of the during the first invasion of the final arc? Or the fans were saying he was meant to die, but Kubo changed it after some fans followed him on Twitter.
Well, they're making up some bullshit. Okay. There is no way that they would know that unless he actually flat out said it in an interview. That's probably just a suspicion that some of them have, and I think it's something that we commented on, it seemed like he was probably supposed to die. But there is no way to be like... Anyone who is actually going is like, well, clearly Byakuya was meant to die, but editorial interference or pressure from his knee-jerk fans caused him to do this, and so you can't criticize it because it wasn't Kubo who actually wrote it. You know, it's one of those kind of things. I do think that is a possibility, but honestly, like... I don't care.
Yeah, it's something that the only people who are going to know that for sure, unless he says in an interview, are essentially just going to be Kubo and his editor. So, if it is the case, it is the case.
Yeah, I really don't care though. I mean, it's not an important enough detail in my mind.
Second question, do you think Nodoka from the manga Nejima can be described as a successful Orihime?
Well, the breakdown that you have for this, because there's more to the question, but, you know, I'm going to save time. Nodoka, for those of you who have never read Nejima, basically, in that 30-something girl harem that Negi ends up with, she is the one who is the most overt about her feelings to Negi. Like, she flat out loves the hell out of him. And wants to, you know, be with him romantically. And at the same time, though, it's a battle series, and she has a very useful power. And she does grow as a character through the course of the series. I never finished Negima, but it was never one of those things where it's like, you know, well, this character's in love with my main character. That's good enough. Which seems to be the case with Orihime, with Hinata, with a bunch of different characters like that in shonen anime and manga. And it gets very frustrating whenever a character is defined exclusively by that. So yeah, if you ever have a character that's like, okay, yeah, they're in love with the main character, but they get to do their own shit, it's so much more satisfying. And it honestly makes me really happy whenever there is that kind of character, just because the one that is defined solely by their attraction is a really, really annoyingly prevalent archetype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, actually, I think probably even get into a question that delves a little bit further into that later on. Third question, do you feel that the way...
You asked me this question, I have no idea. I know I have no idea how to answer it. I haven't read that thing.
Do you feel the way Marvel treated Spider-Girl, Mayday Parker, during the last Spider-Man event was really distasteful and just destroyed her family life to create drama, all while promoting Gwen Stacy as Spider-Woman as the new popular female Spider-Man analog, to be really disappointing?
I mean, are you saying that they kill her family off?
Because, well, I mean, wasn't...
That was kind of an important asset to that character, so...
I don't know the details of it. I know there's a Spider-Verse thing where they basically have all the Spider
crossover. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do know that Spider-Gwen has essentially become, like, the female Spider-Man character, so...
And she's very popular right now.
Yeah, even though she has weird blue fucking sandals on her feet that I don't understand, and it bothers the shit out of me every time I see her design, because I'm like, that's a cool design, except the blue fucking things on her feet, what are those? And for the final question, it's regarding Red Life to Left. I know I risk getting my head bitten off for asking a Red Right to Left question, but it's something I'm really curious about. When you look back on everything you've done in that video series, starting with Prince of Tennis and including the Downfall of Bleach series, what sort of emotion do you get? Are you proud of the work you've done and consider a really well put together, hobby project you did? Are you indifferent towards it? Do you hate it because people keep asking you to make more and you just sort of hate the format now?
It's a mix of all those things, honestly. Okay. I'm proud enough of it to keep it online. Like, I'm sort of ashamed by the way that I sound a lot of the time in those videos, because to me, it's clear that I'm reading a script, because I sound so unnatural to my own ears. But I did, you know, some good work with those things. The Bleach videos in particular, I think, turned out really well. And some of the other videos that I did, I really do like. But at the same time, all that is stuff that it's been a couple of years at least since I made it, and I know how much better my sense of humor and my timing and my ability to speak comfortably about stuff is now. It's the same thing, honestly, if I go back and listen to old episodes of Weekly Manga Recap. I can tell how different I sound, and it really bothers me. Because I'm not the same, I wouldn't sound the same way talking about the same things now as I did back then. That's just kind of the way that I've always been ever since I started paying attention to the stuff that I do. I think that the earliest example is when I was writing fan fiction back when I was in high school, and literally just a year after I started writing something, I looked back and looked at the first chapter and was like, Jesus Christ, I'm so much better now than I am back then. I would be ashamed.
Old Nick sucks.
I would be ashamed if I turned out something like that now. And I can, that's the way that people are. The more we practice at something, the better we get at it. And there shouldn't be a sense of shame for how you used to be in the past. There should be a sense of pride in terms of looking at how far you've come. But it's just a little hang-up that I have. I know it's illogical and it's pessimistic of me to feel that way about it, which is why I'm not entirely ashamed of it, but I still think, like, oh, God, I would have done so much better now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, now they've got everyone an email with questions for you!
Huzzah!
Hello, Chris. They see me rolling. They hatin' Larios.
You didn't even nearly chameleon air that up enough.
They see me rolling. They hatin'.
Larios, I have a few questions to ask you.
You were checking. We're not going to read the whole thing. I probably could because I practiced doing white and nerdy enough when I was younger. But I'm not going to read the entire email with that like that. You mentioned when teching first came on the show that you'd be willing to make an effort to check out an anime, even though you hate slash couldn't be bothered to watch cartoons. And you gave an impression of an anime that you did see, but it wasn't the anime that you said you'd check out when teching was there. Did your love for JoJo overpower your desire to see My Hero Academia?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I've watched JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I mentioned in the last episode, too, Weekly Manga Recap, that I have been watching a couple of anime now.
It's a little weird whenever some stuff is implied in earlier episodes and people ask questions for clarification on that, which we then provide in later episodes before we actually get to the Q&A episode about it.
So. Yeah.
Two, have you checked out the trailer for Tales of Berseria?
Berseria, I think, maybe.
Berseria. Berseria. And if you have not, are you planning to play it following your great Tales of Zestria playthrough?
You mean where I rage quit like a third of the way into the game?
Apparently that was great! and also, if you did see the trailer, are you excited for the first female protagonist and what you have seen of her?
I've not seen the trailer for it. I mostly don't follow gaming news as closely as I used to, so I tend to only find out about things right when it's about to release and things like that. So I have heard that the new Tales game is going to have a female protagonist, and I think that's awesome. Tales games have always had very well-written characters, so I think it's going to be a good thing for them to have a female protagonist. But I really can't say more than that because I don't know much of anything about her. I'll probably play it, though. I like Tales games.
Let's see. Question three, there is a long bit of stuff attached to this one, but I'll just cut to the chase. Given how well Captain America Civil War has done versus how poorly the Batman and Superman movie did, I wanted to ask you as a fellow Captain America fan, what is your favorite speech or moment of Steve Rogers?
I think it's one of a couple people have mentioned before, but it's that quintessential defining moment of him in the MCU from the first movie where he's talking to the scientist, and he's like, "We want to kill Nazis?" And he's like, "No, sir. I don't want to kill anybody. I just don't like bullies. I don't care where they're from." And it's like, it's that perfect Steve Rogers, like, moment that really just defines who he is and all the values that Captain America stands for.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of... It is so weird that, like, there are some things about Captain America that really kind of make you want to just punch him because he's such a perfect Boy Scout guy. But at the same time, he's so earnest in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, ah, I understand you.
Sometimes I want to punch you, but sometimes I just want to be best friends with you.
Ah, I'm Tony Stark. Question four, and speaking of symbols of American ideals, I wanted to ask you about a combination of two, which is highly illegal and potentially immoral, or at least unpatriotic to the highest degree. We all know that Nick's hatred of chocolate and joy makes him adamant on never eating any chocolate flavored food, including fudge Pop-Tarts. I wanted to know where you, Chris, draw the line, though, so here's my question. If you were offered a bald eagle Pop-Tart, would you eat it? How much would you need to be paid to eat it? Or does freedom have no price worth eating the symbol of a nation?
I think it would depend very heavily on how it's presented to me. Like, if I get, like, served this by, like, a group that seems to be, like, an ISIS cult or something like that, they're like, eat this! I'm like, I don't know about this. If, like, Mitt Romney shows up and he's like, I have a lot of money and I just don't give a fuck, eat this bald eagle Pop-Tart, I'm like, I'll try a bite. See how it is. I guess if it's presented to me without the insidiousness of, like, hating America behind it, I'd probably be a lot more open to just being like,
yeah,
like, I don't know, what does a bald eagle taste like?
If the Red Skull showed up and like, eat this bald eagle Pop-Tart.
And I'm like, no, Captain America will save me. And I see him behind him like, Hail Hydra. I'm like, oh, I forgot what happened in the comic books.
Okay. Next question.
Yes. So, our next question here, there's no sign-off. So, Chris, Wire to a Ruler Time, and Nick, it's your turn to rock and roll out. There we go, sorry, Blazer. It's Blazer's asking this.
Blazer.
I hope winter weather is treating you well, Chris, or did you guys actually make it to these questions in fall? Ha! We're in summer! I have some questions I would like answered. With the revelation about the Poneglyphs, do you think one of the road glyphs could be on Obav? Certainly. Bonus question, going with the one above. You guys think that Oda will have the Straw Hats go to Elbath, and how do you think Usopp will react to being on the Island of Giants?
I imagine it would be quintessentially Usopp. Terrified and excited.
I think they will go to Elbath. It's just something that Oda tends to tease things out and then use them. Plus, it's also... It's the closest thing you're going to get to Usopp's dream of being a brave warrior of the sea, I feel like, is going to be in Elbath, because it's a place that's most significant to him.
Right.
Plus, we have a giant guy in Luffy's contingency of crew members, so I think it's probably going to be there.
You're right. Yeah.
One final question, and well, since Nick doesn't want to do it and hates answering questions about Red Right to Left, Chris, when are you going to make a Red Right to Left episode? Once I manage to secretly swindle enough shares of Red Ride to Left away from Nick, and I own majority ownership of the Red Ride to Left brand, then I will start making my own versions.
You're gonna have to be working at that a long time,
It's a hostile takeover. You won't see it coming.
Of this not publicly traded, not really a property.
That I already just announced to you too, so you'll know what's coming. You're like, I just won't sell you any shares.
About this, why was I too lazy to take action?
How did you do this?
All right. Now we've got more questions from Tropical. Chris, rolling dough to a T, Larios, and Nick, captain of the Y-type ruler class battle fleet of Time, Freeman. That is a badass title. Here are some questions. One, I know that Chris mentioned this previously when the Patreon was set up, but have you guys considered adding monthly manga to the lineup? There are a few manga in Jump and on Crunchyroll that might be interesting as a topic of discussion. Yes, we will consider it.
Yes.
I mean, technically we did add Naruto, I guess. Two, on the subject of Crunchyroll, do you feel as a user of their manga reader that they haven't been giving that side of their site as much attention as their anime streaming service? Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely sort of like, it feels like an afterthought for them. They're a manga or an anime streaming site first, and they just have a manga section.
It literally every time that I've ever seen Crunchyroll advertised, it is as an anime streaming service.
Mm.
So, and it makes sense to me that that would be an afterthought. So, meh. Three, this is a question Nick might have more to say on. But what do you think about the idea of Bleach moving from weekly Shonen Jump to a different Shonen magazine, like Jump Square, Jump Next, or even digitally through Jump Plus? Or, in the most unlikely scenarios, moving to a Seinen magazine like Young Jump? I think that it might be a good idea, but it will never happen, because it is too far close to being done.
Despite the fact that it still feels like it could be like a year and a half before we actually get a conclusion.
It is still popular enough that it just be in Jump anyway. And also, I think that Kubo would be very opposed to the idea
Also, would you even want to see Bleach move to a more mature magazine just so he could add more gore and tits to it? Like, it's not something that necessarily we've seen him being that enamored by, but it doesn't seem like anything that would add anything to the series, and I think it would really make Bleach even worse than it is.
Also, there's a note in this question about how, like, no, it's like a joke, it's more of a gag manga instead of an action series. Like, Bleach has always had a goofy sense of humor that was right at home in Shonen Jump.
Yeah, I think almost every series in Jump is a bit remember of action. Remember
Donkanoji? I miss Donkanoji. He was great. Remember Khan before he had one joke, which was growing really, really muscular? For some reason. That was weird. Last question. Chris, now that Beat the Vandal Buster has resumed serialization, are you planning on picking up the series again?
Sure. If they decide to ever translate or something like that, I'd absolutely be willing to give it a shot. I'd like to see that series have some sort of conclusion. It was a good series.
All right.
Yes, questions here from Michael Hurt. I'm starting to think that I may have accidentally been reading questions a month ahead because we haven't gotten to any of the things I took notes down for. Hey, Chris, Roll. Isn't that a useful Mega Man character? Besides Marvel vs. Capcom, where she transformed into a giant lady robot as a final attack for whatever stupid reason. Larios. And Nick, why am I the ruler of time? So Donald Trump Naruto doesn't get it. Seriously, I think I heard him talking about having racial sir ninjas pay for a wall full of forehead protectors around the Village Freeman. I have some questions for you.
That was a trip.
This one is aimed more at Chris than Nick, but if you're casting a remake
This one is aimed entirely at Chris instead of Nick.
If you're casting a remake of Lost using manga characters, who would you pick and choose based on their personalities? I think Sakura would be Kate, since they're both supposedly important and show promise at first, before becoming annoying irritants who need to be saved most of the time and are only remotely likable when presented as mothers, and then even somehow fuck it up. God, this is one I wish I had seen beforehand, because I probably could have given you better answers on this. I almost feel like send the question in another month and I'll get to it, because I don't think I can give you any of the good answers for this at the moment. There's just too many things to consider off the top of my head. What do you think is the best redesign a character from a manga has ever gotten from a time skip? And if you could have a redesign after a certain period of time, what would yours look like? Just asking what we'd want to look like if we, like, had a time skip in real life?
That's a good point, actually, yeah. That's an odd question to receive. I don't know exactly how to answer that part of it. In terms of favorite redesign, I actually think that Sakura's redesign in the Shippuden time skip really did her a lot of favors. Made her look more serious, and also worked well with her new power set of, you know, punching stuff. You know, giving her the gloves and the more form-fitting outfit. It made her look a lot less like a little girl and more like a fighting warrior, even though she only really got to do that for, like, one story arc.
I liked a lot of the One Piece ones. I'm trying to think of what would be... I guess I like the Usopp one, because I guess it did feel like he actually did mature. And I like the hair getting longer. He still felt like he kept that Usopp look, but it did feel like a definitely older...
Well, I mean, that nose is a little difficult to get around. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, like, he kept, like, kind of like the bushy hair, but still put into a new style that worked for him. He looked like he got ripped underneath. It was a pretty good redesign there. And, sorry, last question. I know I've been about this before. I've never got a straight answer. How come sometimes you port over your WM episodes up on Channel Awesome, but other weeks don't? Because sometimes I don't have time to do that.
Yay!
There you go. All
right. Now we get a couple from Ginger Straw Hat. Hey, Nick, the ruler of pirates, and Chris, Rolanoa Zoro T. One, I found myself randomly watching the Amazon Lily mini arc again. And came to a theory about the arc. My theory is that the Amazon Lily arc was Oda's response to critics who say that he's not very good at drawing women that don't look a lot like Nami. There are a bunch of different female designs in that arc. It does almost come off as a response piece. Thoughts on that? I've heard the same theory before. It seems like it could have legs, just because there are so many differently shaped women in there. I think, honestly, though, Oda does have a habit of drawing weirdly designed people, and when he specifically had, okay, you know, here's this Amazon village, so all of them are going to be, you know, women, well, I guess I'll use all my weird design ideas on just all human women. I think that it was a little bit of maybe both. I don't know if it was a direct response piece. Again, it's one of those things, you know, just like the whole, oh, well, he responded to fan criticism by doing this, is it? You'll never really know that unless he flat out says so. It's a possibility, but I think, honestly, it's just a matter of his own habits of designing a large group of characters all at once. Because he always tends to, whenever there's a huge group of people, draw people of all different shapes and sizes.
4.5 pages worth of notes, Dick. I took 4.5 pages worth of notes, and I don't think we're going to get to any of them.
Well, we will if we move quickly enough.
I don't see it at all. I honestly don't think there's any weight to that theory at all.
2, I know I probably have to hand over my man card, but One Piece is one of the few manga that has made me cry.
You don't have to hand over a man card. I almost cried when the boat died.
I wanted to know what sad parts of One Piece made you guys feel sad or cry. Well, there you go, Chris. My personal ones would be when Luffy fought Usopp, or when Luffy realizes that he is what he has left after Ace died. Both get me every time. One stipulation is no flashbacks. But you already got the going merry, so there you go.
Yeah, done.
Gosh. There was a different one.
It didn't make me cry, though, but a really emotional moment is Robin screaming out, "I want to live."
Mm-hmm. There's another also super emotional one where Usopp is welcomed back into the Straw Hats, where he finally apologizes, and Luffy just reaches across the fucking ocean. He's like, "Get back over here, stupid!" Mess of tears all over his face. But I don't think anything actually, for me, measure up to the flashbacks, so I am a little bit hampered by that restriction. 3, a lot of questions you guys seem to get about a lot of the questions you guys get seem to be about fan theories. My favorites, to no one's surprise, are One Piece theories. Do you guys have any One Piece theories, or what do you think are some of the more plausible One Piece theories that you've heard?
I've always had the theory that One Piece itself is the ancient kingdom they've mentioned a lot from the Lost Annals of Time. I've always just thought, the phrase that got thrown around a lot was, "I left everything in one piece," so that's why I maybe thought it was a place, though I realized that's a translation kind of issue coming in. I don't think that's in the original Japanese at all.
I don't think it is.
But I just like the idea that's what Gold Roger left behind. It wasn't riches, but it was truth, kind of, in a way, to kind of play into the idea that, like, you know, the most famous pirate who we know was suffering from a disease and gave himself up willingly and had all these adventures and, you know, interactions with people, didn't just leave a bunch of fucking gold somewhere, like he left something more valuable, but that they don't actually
also
get there.
Also, one huge piece of gold, very difficult to actually use.
Yeah, but also that they don't get there, and he just, like, leaves a sign who's like, you know, "One Piece was the adventure you shared with your friends. Thanks for playing." Like, you know, something a little bit more important than that about the truth.
Streamers fall from the ceiling.
Yeah. I mean, One Piece is a series about chaotic good characters, essentially, so it's probably going to be something where they get there and they realize the kind of evils that can come from a strict government control. Because the biggest antagonists in the series seem to be the world government, so that's just my thought on it.
And Black.
I, because one question we get apparently like a month later was to put a list of character alignments on there, and I have Blackbeard in a perhaps controversial place. I'll leave it at that.
4, what do you guys think the ending to One Piece will be like? Who's going to be involved? What fights do you think will happen?
I don't know. I've thought about this a lot. I think the final fight in One Piece could be like 3 or 4 different things. I think it could be him versus Blackbeard, kind of like setting up Blackbeard as the ultimate antagonist. It could be him against Shanks, mentor against student kind of thing. It could be against Buggy as kind of a way to kind of close out the series of him against kind of his first major opponent as well. I thought it could be like...
You're
him
full of shit.
I legitimately thought it was an option out there. I think it's less likely now since Buggy seemed to have fallen into another role, but I thought it definitely could be an option out there. Luffy versus Zoro, I thought, could be another one, too, to see who's stronger after everything they've gone through.
Good. Well, we got another email from Andrew Straw Hat now.
Oh, yes. Dear Nick, the ruler of life, the universe, and everything, and Chris Arizona Iced Tea. I feel like mine was a lot lamer in comparison to...
Well, you know what? You can't drink Life, the Universe, and Everything, though.
I don't drink Arizona Iced Tea, though, so it's the same scenario for me. I've been reading a lot of Hunter x Hunter lately and picked up this weekly Shonen Jump bundle with the last batch of chapters from 2014. I enjoy the series, but the 9 chapters bored me to tears. What do you guys think about Togashi? Do you think he's lazy? Do you think that he's losing interest in the story and characters? And do you think there's a fan base more patient with its mangaka than Hunter x Hunter fans?
Probably not. Seriously, that guy's gone on so many different hiatuses that, like, it's not just a matter of, you know, going away for a long time and then coming back, like Beat the Vandal Buster. This guy has come back and then gone back away so many times, and people are still waiting around for more chapters.
And there was a significant quality drop in those chapters he even came back with last time. There were a lot of panels I noticed that were unfinished. There were a lot of panels that just had no background. Like, it was some sloppy work then, and then he
maybe Berserk fans.
Yeah, I was going to say, doesn't Berserk fans been waiting, like, 10 years for, like, new shit?
Something along those lines, yeah. I think, though, that Togashi, I don't think he's honestly lazy. I think he's just fickle. I think that he gets an idea for something, and then he comes back, and he does a few chapters, and he's like, I don't really want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And then he stops. And he can, because he's got a great contract. I think it's honestly just he occasionally gets this kind of itch to do something. He comes up with an idea that he thinks that he likes, and then he doesn't like it enough to stick with it. And I think that because, as a writer, I've done the exact same thing. I've got an idea, and I've gotten really crazy into it, and I've put out, like, you know, one little chapter, or chapter equivalent of it, and then I've just never done it again. And sometimes it's a matter of, you know, just not having the fire, sometimes it's just a matter of not having the time, but in general, it's just, I lost interest in it, and I thought about the amount that I threw myself into it before each time, and each time that I think about doing it again, I realize I don't have the same passion for it as when I first started doing it, so it's probably not worth doing, because it's not going to be as good as it would be when I was passionate about it.
Second question. I subscribe to the idea that you can make a good blank out of anything, and manga is no different. What are some of the craziest ideas you've seen done well in manga? I know Crimson's may jump immediately to mind.
It does.
iShow 21. I cannot believe that Japan made an amazing American football manga. It is baffling to me to think about that.
That's not surprising to me, because it's a sports manga, and there have been plenty of great sports manga aside from that one.
It just baffles me that Japan... It would be like if we got a great sports movie about, like, rugby or something like that. Like, an amazing sports movie and popular. That's, I guess, the other thing that's quantifiable in that. That iShow 21 was a popular series as well. If you made a good rugby movie and it was popular, that would blow my goddamn mind. It's the same sort of thing where I'm like, it was a Japanese manga about American football that was great and people loved it.
Or if you made a movie about hockey, that's the weirdest thing about the Mighty Ducks, man. Is that it was popular enough to get two goddamn sequels
and a cartoon series where they were fighting robot ducks.
Well, one that had nothing to do with the one about Emilio Estevez coaching kids. I rewatched that movie with my girlfriend because she had never seen it before. Mm-hmm. It holds up pretty well. There's definitely some problems with it. But then I was just like, I'm going to skip through the second one a bit. That second movie makes no goddamn sense. There's evil Russians that are from Iceland, basically. Because they're like, well, the Berlin Wall fell 5 years ago, so we can't have it be evil Russians in this hockey movie. Evil Icelanders!
It's such a bummer that, like, after the Cold War stopped, we just stopped using Russians as our go-to antagonist for everything.
They're so good for it.
It's so perfect! Their voices are so, like, menacing and scary. It's great.
And one that I actually immediately thought of was Onani Master Kurosawa. Because, like, this is a really great manga about a teenager who masturbates. And that's the premise. So, it's not one of the most out there ideas in terms of, like, you know, weird stuff. It's not like, you know, oh, there's food fighting each other or whatever. But just in terms of there's a guy who goes into the girl's bathroom and masturbates, and that's where you start off from. That's a pretty weird starting point for me.
Nick, I hadn't been into Yu-Gi-Oh! In a long time, pretty much stopped after GX premiered. So if you were to convince me to watch each different series, what would you say its best and worst aspect of each series? He's trying to convince you to watch the series by telling you the worst things about them?
I guess to warn you about them? I don't know. All
right, fair enough.
Originally, Yu-Gi-Oh! has really good rivalries in it. The relationship between Yugi and Joey, the relationship between Yugi and Kaiba, are both really, really strong character relationships and rivalries that really keep you invested in it, despite a lot of the weaker stuff that gets thrown around, especially in, like, filler seasons. Worst parts of it is that it really didn't have its identity while it was going on, so there's a bunch of just weird, random shit that happens, like Joey dueling Duke Devlin and dressing up as a dog when he loses. And
Dungeon Dice Monsters and...
Well, that was the Dungeon Dice Monster.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the other filler arcs.
The virtual reality arc. Not the second one where they have Deck Masters, because that one at least still stuck to dueling. The one where they just...
They went to a fucking... Yeah, they were just like, we're going to be a LARPing game for a little bit.
And for some reason, the princess character is identical to Mokuba, and...
Yeah, that's some fucked up Shorten fraud thing that no one really got into.
It's just some weird shit. GX, the worst part of it is that it has, like, the weakest start. It's just dueling for the sake of it. There is so much goddamn dueling for the sake of it. And I mean the start as in, like, honestly, it has, like, the worst middles of arcs, where shit just happens for no reason. But it has some of the best character development for a protagonist. The deconstruction of Judai in the third season, and eventually his overcoming it. The third season is really what makes that whole series. And it also has a really good follow-up with Darkness! Which is just fun to say. 5Ds is... It's got a really strong first season, just in terms of the way the entire story fits together. It has... one of the weakest departures from what makes it good in the second part of it, though, in terms of how many characters just get fucked over, in terms of what made them great. Jack and his relationship with Carly gets fucked over. Aki gets fucked over because her arc was completed in the first part. Yusei's relationship with new people who come around, it really seems really thrown in. It really goes downhill. I have nothing good to say about Zexal. I think it's complete shit, and its protagonist is stupid. Arc 5 is the best. I still have a lot of it that I need to catch up on, but in terms of the way that it treats a wide cast of characters, it is the best. I guess you could say that one part that it struggles with is that it also does suffer from... Probably the worst aspect of it, actually, is just that... Some of it seems too convenient. They're really pushing the new thing that they're pushing is pendulum monsters, which basically the way it works is, well, you put these two monsters down in these two extra zones that we added to the game, and then you can summon a whole bunch of monsters at once. And in order for that to work, you have to have a hand entirely full of monsters, and so it's just like, well, that seems completely convenient. A lot of characters end up in their unimportant duels doing the exact same thing over and over and over, and it's really fucking obvious. But that's really just a nitpick, because it's got so many great characters who have so many great moments between them, and, like, strong female characters, strong lead characters, strong supporting characters. Literally, like, there's one, like, almost joke character in the story. I can't remember his name. I think it's Takumi. Who basically, he's trying to screw over another side character in this tournament that they've got going on, where he'll do all the work and win, basically, star chips, Battle City cards, etc. You know, whatever thing that they're, you know, trying to get for the tournament. And so he is basically luring them in so that this guy that he is manipulating will actually do all the heavy lifting by dueling them, defeating them. And then he's like, and then when he's you know, least expected, then I'll duel him and take all of the stuff that he's won and you know, double cross him. And so he's convincing him, like, oh yeah, we're a super strong combination, buddy. Yeah, I'm totally going to backstab this guy. And then they get in trouble when the tournament gets invaded by these villainous characters, and he kind of reluctantly gets dragged into helping out in this battle royal situation. And the guy who he was planning to double-cross, he suddenly backed him up, and the guy turns to him and says, hey, we really are the strongest combination, aren't we? And he's like, you got it, partner. And it's like, oh, he really does care about him now. And then right after they say that, they both basically get killed. And it's such a heartbreaking moment because this guy who was such a one-note character suddenly came around, had this badass moment, bonded with the guy he was planning on betraying, and then they both get taken down together. It does stuff like that all the time with so many different characters, and I fucking love it.
Right.
Just watch Arc 5, because it literally encompasses everything about all the best aspects of the previous Yu-Gi-Oh! Series. Sometimes including characters from those series, but I'm not going to give too much else away. Anyway.
Have you guys ever had a series that you like and got you hooked on in one chapter?
My Hero Academia.
Siren, actually. That first chapter I thought was fantastic, and that got me super into that series.
Okay.
Alright. Next questions here.
From Andre Golden. Dear Y, the ruler of the Fast and the Furious, and Mad Max T. Okay.
Fair enough.
I was going through your old episodes of Weekly Manga Recap and your old Manga Low Points episode. You didn't mention Naruto. I was wondering why.
I have no idea. You brought up, like, hey, I listened to this podcast you guys did 4.5 years ago. Do you know why you did this thing? Like, I don't know.
It might be because we were very negative at Naruto at the time anyway.
Or I think maybe, didn't we have that episode that was, like, titled, like, How We Fix Naruto, but it was essentially just what we'd like to see different in Naruto? Maybe that came around then, so I don't know.
It was probably something in terms of, like, we wanted to talk about stuff we hadn't mentioned recently.
Yeah.
And I think that we were talking a lot about Naruto at the time. I think we were. Don't take my word for it, though.
Yes. Question here from Reville from Austria. Thank you, Austria. First of all, love your podcast, your humor and banter. Keep me sane during boring work days that I dread, and I'm done with the archive, and I wait for new ones to come off. Thank you very much, Ripple. We're glad to hear you do that. You also ask, are you okay with fan art, and would you be interested in seeing it? I think we're both absolutely would love to see it. He gives a plug to mangawithoutcontext.tumblr.com, which I believe is his website. I'm assuming Ripple's.
Nice.
Is that a male name? I don't know Austrian names at all.
Ripple? I don't know.
Sounds male? I guess. I don't know. I'm bad at things. Two questions for you. Have you ever spent a considerable amount of time trying to figure out an aspect of the world that was mostly not likely ever intended to be thought about? For example, I spent way too much time figuring out the bureaucratic nightmare that was the world navy or the world government and navy in One Piece. There has to be a massive archive somewhere in the world where they would copy and file every report and keep track of everyone that gets paid and stations and all the corpses. Anyway, have you ever thought about parts of the manga world you'd love to see explored? But they probably won't. Hollows and Quincy's in Bleach. I, to this day, think it's an astonishingly complex and tragic relationship that they all share that just never seemed to got explored after the initial arc that it was introduced in.
There is so much shit about Hollows and how they work that has not been capitalized on. Mm-hmm. It is a fucking travesty.
Like, it's such a interesting world when you consider it. And it was like, nah, I mean, it's mostly just there to be like, there's magic archers in the world, too.
I really think that it's just a matter of, yeah, Kubo introduced them mostly just to have these different factions to fight, more than to think about how their societies interrelate and so on.
Yeah, I think I could go on for days about the various aspects of the Soul Society and how they confuse me. I still don't get why there's class systems within the Soul Society. Like, I just don't understand any of how the Soul Society is meant to function.
And the first person to say, well, if you just read this Bleach data book, it's going to get bisected.
By you or just coincidentally? All right, we'll go with that. Question two, if you ever...
I also wanted to... No, it's okay. I also kind of wanted to make a note. Oh, fuck. Now I've forgotten it. God damn it, Chris. Never mind, go ahead.
Sorry.
Oh, wait. All right. How does the fucking technology in Naruto work? What technological period are they in? I don't know.
They just have VCRs and radios, but, you know.
And then they
just have, those.
And then they time skip to having computers and, ah!
Question two. If you ever did a time skip, how long would it be and what would be the biggest changes to you and the podcast?
Well, there might end up having to be a time skip at some point in our lives, just as we get older and enter a new period in our lives. I don't know exactly how well we'll be able to maintain this if either of us should get married and have kids. So, I don't know. If there may indeed have to come a time when we might have to take a little bit of a hiatus and then come back. But it's kind of one of those things where it's like life is unpredictable. So you'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. If you see Daisy Ridley outside my home, realize that my courting her has finally gone successfully, and we're probably on the way for a time skip any moment then, because I'm going to be too busy banging my super hot actress wife. / lover, because I'm going to get someone on the side, too. Despite the fact I married one of the most attractive women in Hollywood, I'm still just going to cheat on her for no reason. I've been watching so much Boardwalk Empire.
There are so many Star Wars The Force Awakens haters out there like, yeah, you fucking tell them you cheated on that. You take
Daisy Ridley and her Mary Sue ass down a notch by being unfaithful to her.
That's how a real man acts. Enough of this fucking... She deserved it after that fucking SJW J.J. Abrams gave her that bullshit character.
# dark side.
Oh, God. And that's how we feel about people who complain like cunts about The Force Awakens. Anyway. There's also a follow-up question here from Rivel, which is, are you okay with fan art? Yes, yeah. Go ahead. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway, from Jack Lebrano is the next one. Hoi, Nick and Chris. Looking back at your Naruto retrospective, I recall you both actually liking the series in the end, despite the whole Kaguya plot and Sasuke being redeemed as a good guy. So that being said, what kind of Naruto would Naruto had to have had to make it not a recommendable series?
It would have had to have been something, like, absurdly drastic, like Sasuke revenge murders Naruto and half the village. Like, it would have to be something absurd. Because, I mean, even though...
Sasuke kills Naruto in their final battle, massacres the hierarchy of Konoha, and then has Sakura marry him anyway.
Yeah, like, forced marriage.
Like, Sasuke more than Naruto, and... Kakashi looking fondly on a photograph of Team 7, but with Naruto's part of the photograph ripped out.
With another picture of Sasuke over his face. Yeah, something like, because the thing is, like, even if one aspect of it is bad, there was still a lot of goodwill just towards Naruto, the franchise, that the series, like, the ending would have had to been just shitting all over the history of the franchise to really not be worth the journey.
As much as it did upset us to an extent, because we disagree with the idea that Sasuke should be. Yeah. But the way that the story was written up to that point, it was always what was going to happen. So, it would have more had to be an inconsistency with the build to that point, like a betrayal, if you will, of the things that had been built up over the course of the series. That conclusion was one that had been built to in terms of the relationship between Naruto and Sasuke. So although I do disagree with it personally, I do understand why it was done.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, question here from Supernova RX. Hey, Magnificent Mighty Magikarp Nick and Fairly Known Unknown Chris. I have Pokemon-themed questions. First, what do you think was the worst way Ash lost the Pokemon League? I don't know if I've seen most of the ways
he's
lost.
I've only seen the first one, so.
I know I've seen other ones. Like, I know he had one where he lost to, like, a fucking dancing Meowth. Or something, like a cowboy Meowth. Like, it was like a Meowth that had, like, a fucking cowboy hat and, like, a bandana on and
that's
shit.
That's stupid as shit.
And one he lost because his opponent just had a fucking Darkrai.
Yeah.
Like, just had a fucking legendary Pokemon.
Just had random legendaries in his team. It was like, well.
Like, it took five of Ash. I think it took Ash's entire team to beat the Darkrai. And the dude's like, alright, here's my other legendary bullshit Pokemon. And I was like, this sucks. That's probably the worst. But I just want to note, I love the way Ash lost the original Pokemon League. I thought it was so fucking harsh and awesome that they put that in a kid's show.
He did? Just his failure.
As a trainer, he just completely failed to raise Charizard right. Charizard didn't see Charmander. It was Charmander, I think, was the one.
He beat Charmander because it was part of his line, but then...
Yeah, then Pikachu came out, and he just didn't even see it as a worthy opponent, so he just fell fucking asleep and got disqualified. That's so fucking brutal and heartbreaking and awesome at the same time.
And I've only seen the first one.
Second, assuming you play Pokemon, what is your greatest achievement in the video games?
Well, eventually, I cheated in order to complete the Pokedex. honestly, I did have one of my best memories of playing through Gold was I completely neglected building a team. So, when I got to the Elite Four, I just Typhlosioned all of them.
You said, like, one crazy super-powered Pokemon?
Yeah, and I had to basically just use my other Pokemon as beat shields in order to revive him whenever he fell down. But I managed to make it all the way to the end. So that, I
love that you'll do that shit. That's your strategy, yet everyone in the game's like, Silva, you should learn a lesson from this guy. He cares about his Pokemon. And like, shit, Typhlosion's down. Sudowoodo, go out there and get your ass kicked while I use Revival on my Pokemon I like.
Hey, I'll have you know, Typhlosion liked me a lot.
Yeah, it's like, one member of your team was super happy with you. The rest are like, please don't send us in for this. At least let me fight. You're like, no, you use your turn so I can heal Typhlosion.
Although you will very... Anyone who knows the Pokemon games knows that the Johto Elite Four is a complete fucking joke, so...
Yeah.
Because it's midway through the game as opposed to at the very end.
Whereas the Unova Elite Four is horseshit. Because that's like a fucking 20-level jump from the last gym. It is absurd how tough that... Like, the final gym area is like level 60 to 70. Like, it is an insane jump up in difficulty.
Gen 4 is around the same kind of jump. And I remember, in order to prepare for that game, I was just like, well, time to walk around Victory Road for about 7 hours.
Yeah, like, I'm just going to sit here and just keep paying A until I eventually went, oh, there's going to be a Zapdos episode coming out on the anime soon? That sounds awesome. Sorry, I got really excited by that. I probably shouldn't have.
Why would there be Zapdos?
I don't fucking care, but Zapdos is my favorite. Give me more goddamn episodes. Anyway, last question here. Other than Pikachu, what Pokemon of Ash's was your favorite? Charizard. Charizard was always cool.
Charizard was very cool. Bulbasaur.
Bulbasaur was
had
awesome.
Cool moments.
I always liked Pidgeotto. Came out, had a cool sound. Pidgeotto! Fucking sweet.
Pikachu it is definitely a good, like, main character just to have around. The series would not be the same if he weren't constantly there with Ash. For a bit of a less remembered one, Primeape. I loved his Primeape. but he was only around for like 2 or 3 episodes before he was just like, well, I'll leave you here to train with someone else. Like, Ash, you could use a fighting type! also I really liked his Oshawott when he was in Best Wishes.
I liked Heracross too, now that you say it. I think Heracross is cool as well. Always sucking the shit out of Bulbasaur's back. It's kind of erotic, I think. And it was just nature, but to it's me, like, it was like, oh my god, he's sucking that Bulbasaur off!
It's like how James' best Pokemon was Victory Bell, because it was constantly trying to eat him. Yeah. Okay, this next one is from Cantarell. Hey, Nissen Crick. Have either of you read Platinum End, the new Opa Obata series? If so, what are your thoughts so far? I think there's a very Ashiroki Muto feel to it. It's not running a weekly show in Jump, but is there any chance of you talking about it regularly? Well, I guess that more qualifies as a recommendation than a question, but...
To the actual question, no, I've not read it. I plan to. I've been just waiting. I have a small hope that it'll get compiled into volumes, and I can buy those, because I just haven't had the desire to pick up, like, 99, or I think it's $1.99 chapters each month. And reading one chapter at a time. I kind of just want to get more of it at one time than what's available currently.
And we also have a second email from them.
Now, from here on, I have notes for these questions.
All right, awesome. Second question. What the fuck is Gildarts, the supposedly strongest mage in Fairy Tail, doing during this whole invasion thing? I think the last time that we saw him was when Natsu was on his journey, and they just kind of ran into him, right?
Yeah. I think he will show up. He's going to show up. Every fucking character has shown up already in this arc. He's going to show up, most likely, I think, to have to do with the fairy heart thing, fairy law, with Kana. I think that's where his role is going to show up as.
Okay.
All right. Questions here from Blockhead. Hello, Nick, Y Ruler, Weekly Manga Recap, Fame Freeman, and Chris, roll. Oh, it's the other guy, Larios. So mean. Fuck you.
I love.
No, question one. You've given us your list of manga you'd like to see get a Western movie adaptation. What would you like to see made as manga for Western franchises, and what would the premise of it be? So, I thought a lost manga would be great. Coincidentally, I did not plan the characters up, which would have answered that other question that got sent in, but I thought Lost would fit very well, especially in like a 20th Century Boys long-running kind of mystery series. And since I figured Nick wouldn't be too crazy about that one, I also thought Gravity Falls, the Cartoon Network show, I think that would work really well as a manga. It's already very episodic for the most part, but has a story going to it. It's got a style of humor that would definitely already work, and the supernatural elements, I think, would be enough to kind of hook any reader into it. I think it'd be a series that would be very successful.
I'm going to go with one that's kind of obvious for me, Avatar.
Okay.
There are comics that the original creators have done that kind of continue the story from it, and they're very good. So I definitely think that it would work very well in a progressive art format.
Two, which character do you feel the most out of place for the series they are in? Bonus points if it's the main character of the series.
Honestly, I think Zaraki is very out of place in his series.
Yeah, I can see that. I have Azami from Food Wars. He's such an evil villain that he really does at times feel out of place in a series that's just about food. It all works, but you're like, this is a dude for as evil and controlling as he is. He should probably be in something else.
I get you definitely with that.
The third question here: if you had to build a bobsled team consisting of Shonen Jump characters, how would you sidetrack things to avoid answering stupid and pointless questions like this? The wackier and nonsensical, the better. All right, so our next email. So
other than John Candy, did the people in Cool Runnings ever show up in anything else?
I haven't seen Cool Runnings, so I honestly can't
you
say.
You've never seen Cool Runnings?
No.
Okay. You're going to stop answering questions now.
The podcast is done. It's an emergency. Cool Runnings.
Jamaica, we got a bobsled team.
And Nick's like, I have my plane ticket. I'm flying up to Harrisburg. You start popping popcorn, but plan it to be ready in 5-ish hours, and then we'll watch Cool Runnings.
I'm pretty sure that's all. That's on me and Nicole's Disney watch list, too, so she can join us. God. Well-worded question. Very well done. Next up from Gelly Elfson. Lately, I noticed that there are a bunch of Korean manhwa being translated. What do you suppose has caused an increase in popularity for them? Also, since WMR has on occasion done a manhwa, would you be open to doing episodes for comics of other countries, like manhua from China? And I hope to God I pronounced that remotely correctly. I probably didn't do it exactly correctly, but I hope I was a little bit close. I know that there are some series that have been translated by fans from China. There was a series that I started off reading a long time ago called Bowling King. Mostly it was just like, I was like talking about a bunch of sports manga, and I was like, oh, I wonder what if this has ever done. And I was like, oh yeah, there's a Chinese bowling one. And I'm sure that if you keep on sending us recommendations, eventually we will do it. As in terms of why there's more Korean stuff getting translated, I don't know. Aside from, I think that there are more that are, like, there's a bunch of the, like, long-form ones, like Tower of God, that are just freely available, and they're getting enough attention that people are translating them. I think that that's it.
Yeah, we'd absolutely be open to it, so by all means. We also got this one here. It might be kind of caught up in it. You may not have seen it just because it was titled question as well. So Yahoo likes to assume it's all part of the same email chain, despite the fact these two people never message each other, which is a really big fucking problem I have with Yahoo's message client, but I won't get into that right now. This is from a person who didn't leave their name. Dear Chris and Nick, I was wondering where you guys read manga not in Shonen Jump. I'm new to reading manga, and there are a few series I like to read, like Nanatsu no Taiza, Fairy Tale, and the newer JoJo's. I'm not sure where to find these without going on Amazon and dropping every dollar I own. If you could help, that would be great. Fairy Tale is available on Crunchyroll. You can get a subscription to that. I think it's like $5 a month or something like that. It's not too inexpensive, or too expensive rather, and you can get Fairy Tale chapters, I think, every Tuesdays when they come out. There's a lot of other series on there. I don't know what Nanatsu no Taiza is, and the newer JoJo stuff hasn't been translated yet. I'm hoping that since the other JoJo stuff has been successful, that Jump will continue to release that stuff. But outside of that, I'm not going to tell you where to go to find that stuff, but if you're interested, I imagine you can find it pretty easily.
Okay.
Do you want me to do the next one then? So that was kind of an unofficial question.
No, I'll do this one. Okay. Well, no, you know what? You go ahead and do it.
Okay. Greetings! We're out at a Voodoo time, and did you know Rhoda is a French cheese? I noticed that Nick... Wait, did he want the entire thing in it?
I think that
it might... Fuck it, yeah, we're doing it.
Whatever.
I noticed that Nick has not yet aligned himself with the unofficial Kisamu fan club. Nick has gone so far in supporting this beautiful pairing of underage teenagers that he written his sexy fan fiction about. It is one of the most beautiful and heartwarming stories I've ever read. Especially in the sequel.
Best I've ever heard since Lady in the Water.
Especially the sequel with the orgy of the fan fiction, not Lady in the Water, though I've written several fan fiction sequels for that. High quality work there. But I digress. Benzai would not say digress. He'd be like, but wait! Nick, why haven't you shown your co-host your support and joined the fan club? I feel that someday this would be the rift that tear you apart. Also, never shave your sexy beard, you beautiful man, you!
Well, there's no danger of that, don't worry about it. I haven't aligned myself with the unofficial Kisamu fan club, mostly because of Chris's fanfiction.
You're like, it's not my ship, goddammit.
They're cute and all, but who fucking cares?
Chris, if WMR ever did get a PO box, would you wear a big new fuzzy blue hat if I were to send you one? Signed, Totally Not Barry. This is all done in a Benzai accent, by the way, in case people are like, what's happening?
The request was specifically for it to be read in the Benzai voices, so.
Yes. Yes, I would wear a big blue fuzzy hat if someone sent it to me via the PO box that we don't have yet, and I'm still considering whether or not to get one, so.
Dear Nick, Spider-Man has had a shiv in this series, Freeman. Sorry, I didn't say that right. Dear Nick, Spider-Man had a ship in this series! And Chris, he needs a wacky voice. There he is.
It really is like my catchphrase.
This is from Satellite of Love, by the way. You guys answered a question about ranking the GOTY 13 captain, so I'll ask, could you rank the Espada? Well, they're already ranked, though.
Yeah, like mine go exactly in order. Yami's at the top.
But that was for favorites. So, so Mari is the bottom. Because fuck him. Oh gosh. Stark is my favorite, I think.
Do you want to just do a top three? He sounded like it's just a top three.
Stark is my favorite. Grimmjow is up there. I don't know what the third would be, though.
Mine is just one, which is Barangon, because he's the only one that I thought was really cool in that group. Everyone else was pretty forgettable for me, for the most part. There's some good ones in there, just Barangon.
So together we can make a top
three. Yeah, we just combine ours. Barangon's fucking metal, though.
Mari's the worst.
Yeah, we all agree on that. Yami blows, too. Alright, we'll move on to the next question here. This is... someone, an Argentinian listener, who's been listening since the Deck Out the Bass's Days of Lore. Hello, Dawn, move forward. Hello, Dawn, forward movement along a surface by revolving on the axis OT and.
Because all.
And Sir Nick, unobstructed man. I didn't get that one.
Because free.
Look at that.
Very, very, very clever.
These are very good ones. I just want to know your opinion after the apparent off-screen training that Vivi from One Piece has been doing. She jumped from the ship's mast in the episode, the chapter we saw her in, and landed perfectly on what seemed to be a single foot without anyone really being surprised. Between this and Rami's new weapon, I'm hoping to see some cool female battles. But who knows, this is Oda, the guy who consciously keeps drawing the same female body type despite knowing people complain about it. Thanks for reading this. I don't honestly think it's... I think she has gotten stronger, per se. I don't know if she's a battle character in the same way. I think it's just one of those things designed to give you a sense of, like, freedom and speed and things like that. It reminds me a lot of... It's actually a scene that doesn't get talked enough about because it's actually a really cool scene. But when Kaku jumps off of the... I think it's the Galilea Tower in Water 7. And it's before you know he's a bad guy or anything like that. And it's just, like, a two-page spread of him, like... just sailing through the sky and, like, his arms are spread. It's, like, a really cool kind of moment. I think it's just something like that designed to give that idea of when characters have their freedom, how they just kind of move with it.
I don't really have anything to add to that.
And our Argentine listener also says, I'm probably wrong, but I'm terribly suspicious of All Might's police friend being the traitor. He's the only normal human with screen time, and that unsettles me.
Those muggles. this one comes from Yid. Dear Ro-Lovin' It T, and why buy a mattress anywhere or else? You won't be a ruler of time anymore if you don't.
Oh, you gotta do that better. Why buy a mattress anywhere
or else? You won't be a ruler of time anymore if you don't.
There's a fucking furniture store near me called Bob's Furniture.
I should do it like this one asshole on the radio all the time. He's trying to sell me a car. Why buy a mattress anywhere else? You won't be a ruler of time anymore if you don't.
You got, like, the one dude from New York who
should... He keeps on talking about it. It's like, it's gonna be huge. Huge.
It's gonna be... Wait, is this a car dealership or is Donald Trump talking to you through the radio? It's gonna be huge.
What the fuck is with that word? Huge. Anyway. It's the beginning of May now, so I suspect you'll have to get to this in June or July.
Sure.
Correct.
Very good job, Yid.
Rolo T, in the episode Moosey 316, you said that if World Trigger was still running in 3 years, you were going to hate Yuichi Jin. What is your no-holds-barred opinion of now that those 3 years have passed?
I don't hate him. I think he's fine. He's done a lot better considering the type of power he has to be... a fun element to the series. He's not annoying like I worried he was going to be. He's not series breaking. And he's been a fun kind of like seemingly neutral element to the heroes. Like he doesn't seem to be guiding them too much in any one direction and being annoying.
Right. Other question. In one of the recent chapters of One Piece, 823, we see one of the traveling royalty is King Steli, whom you might recall is the adopted brother Sabo's biological parents pretty much replaced him with. With this being shown alongside the revolutionary base being destroyed, do you have any theories on how Oda might use Steli as a character?
I don't. Actually, people I remember mentioned that at the time. I completely had forgotten Stelly was a character. I don't remember a lot about the Sabo flashback, to be honest. That one never really struck me that hard. So a lot of the smaller details about that I completely forgot. So I don't know what they'll do with Stelly. Maybe it'll be like a... I guess it probably won't, since the nobles have been kind of all painted to be shitheads. But part of me was like, maybe it'll be kind of like a Helenpo kind of role, a character who was a dickhead at the start, but then, you know, turns out to get their shit together.
We'll see. Yeah. Another guy related to Sapo, too.
Yeah. Alright, so Paperclip here says, hello, why do you bother wasting your time? Why do you bother wasting your time? Okay, I guess I just expected Rollo to be in there somewhere. And Rollo, D's nuts on your chin tee. Mine's so dirty.
It's so hateful, both of them.
My first question is, how many series of manga do you think each of you has read total?
I have fucking no clue.
Honest to God, I could not give you an honest... I know if you count up, I guess, all the episodes we've done of recommendations for Weekly Manga Recap, which is probably somewhere around, I guess, like 200 or so.
Yeah, it's got to be multiple hundreds by now.
Yeah. Something like that, I guess, plus probably about another 24 that I've read that we just never done a show on or something like that. I can't give you an exact estimate, though, unfortunately. Which leads to my next question. How many series at a time do you like to read?
That is a good question. Recently, I like to just focus on one at a time, but occasionally I will have multiple ones open at once and kind of go between them. No more than three at a time. Unless it's, you know, just like one of my regular things. Like, if it's in terms of, like, I've got to catch up on this series, and I've got to read this series, and I've got to read this series, up to three, but usually just one.
I like, you know, the Shonen Jump magazine as it is, which is like 8 chapters a week, essentially, and then we get Fairy Tail with that. I think that's good. If you're talking about, like, for fun, I, to be completely honest, don't read manga outside of what we read for Jump or recommendations anymore.
It's kind of enough now.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's also I don't have the free time like I used to. Like, if I, you know, back in the day, I used to be able to read at work. Like, that's where I read, like... 20th Century Boys and most of JoJo was because I had a job that didn't give a fuck what I did, so I had a lot of free time there, and I don't know, so I don't have that much anymore, so it tends to just be whatever we get for the show. And then I pick up, like, odd volumes of series that I read and maybe follow off stream or things like that, but I think Jump really, right now, like, the magazine size is pretty much exactly where I'd like it to be. Also, how do you feel about out of your old series like Uba, Blot, and Vinland Saga, are any you may feel differently about since you last read them, or that you may even consider adding to the recap portion? Well, adding to the recap portion is something I think we consider something else. I mean, we kind of addressed it earlier. We're not opposed to adding new things to the recap, but it'd be something we'd have to, like, kind of talk about, because our podcasts tend to go over 2 hours already, so...
Right.
I don't know about series that maybe... Maybe Tower of God. I know a lot of people said if we had finished Tower of God, we probably would have liked it more than we did.
I mean, we already did like it a fair amount. So.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been asked variations of that question before, too, anyway. You know, revisiting a series once we've actually completed it and stuff. I'm not saying we're never going to do it, but don't hold your breath on everything, so... Mm-hmm.
Also, how do you feel about series that ended you haven't been able to mention, specifically Shamo to Why Ruler Time?
Did that one actually end?
I'm assuming so.
I guess it did, because it had been on, like, a hiatus for a while, and then it, like, came back, and, it was weird. I guess it concluded last year. All right.
The last one I think that happened for me specifically, I continued reading Holy Land after we read it on the podcast. I think I actually did, when it ended, I talked about it on the podcast, my thoughts on it, which was I liked it a lot as a whole series. But generally speaking, there haven't been many series that I haven't finished on the podcast that I continued reading or anything like that.
Right. That's kind of the thing was, like, obviously I didn't mention Shamo because I didn't read Shamo when it finally ended, so...
But you did read the MMA girl fighting series, which his name is...
Teppu.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did go back and finish that one, but that one was on a weird release schedule in terms of when whoever was translating it got it out, so it actually had ended long before I actually got to talk about it. So that's a very good series. It's got one of those endings where it's like, God, I wish there was more, but this is kind of perfect anyway.
Yeah, so. That's the best place to end it at, when you're like, I wish there was more, but I'm glad there's not.
Mm-hmm.
My last question is, and you probably get it all the time, what are your thoughts on the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure anime, specifically the role of T scene as the fourth part of the series is currently airing, and that is his favorite part? I'm loving the part four anime that I've gotten thus far. I was baffled that they did Pearl Jam, because it's such a nothing chapter in the manga, like it has no real consequences to things. I thought, surely they'll cut this for time, because there's no consequences to this at all. It's not even like it's a real fight, it's just like this weird, goofy chapter. And they put that in, so I'm like, holy shit, they're putting everything into this fucking series, and it's been a ton of fun. They just got to the start of the Red Hot Chili Pepper fight, and I love seeing Okuyasu's power in action. I love seeing his thought process. I love getting to see, like, I seriously mark out every time the Josuke Just Kicked Your Ass theme pops in. It's just awesome to see it. It's been a total trip, and I can't wait to see them get to the meatier parts of this this part of this JoJo franchise.
All right. Next up from Campy, Merry Christmas, Y-Roller of Tim and Rolo T. T spelled like the drink. I guess because...
Bam!
Tim British? All right. Question one, what are your thoughts on My Hero Academia anime? I've only seen the first, like, two episodes. What I've seen of it, I do like. I don't have very strong opinions on it. I have heard that it is very good, which makes me happy, because if it's very good, then that means people, you know, like it. They're going to keep watching it. They're going to be influenced to read the manga. They're going to discover it. My Hero Academia is going to be very popular, and that's good.
Yes. I have not watched it. I didn't realize that I could watch it on Funimation, I guess it's on, but a week later, I thought I just had to pay for it completely, and after paying for a Crunchyroll subscription to watch JoJo, I was like, fuck that, I'm not paying for two different anime subscriptions.
I do really like the opening of the show.
I have heard the opening. The opening's decent.
Question two. Fans of anime and manga often have at least one series that they know is crap, but love anyway. What are some of your favorite guilty pleasure anime or manga? What makes them such guilty pleasures? What draws you back to them time and again?
I have, you know what, this is, some people might get angry when I first say this, but I admit JoJo for me is a little bit of a guilty pleasure. And I don't think it's a crap series, but JoJo is weird as shit, and it's full of, like, science, especially when you get to the later parts, you're like, this is such horseshit. What the fuck are you talking about? How is the golden rectangle doing this shit? It is absurd. You're the traveling through dimensions just because you had the perfect architecture and an angle. What is this? But I guess that's why I love JoJo too, is because it's so silly and earnest and so invested in its own wackiness that I absolutely adore every weird, stupid aspect of it.
I think indicate in the past that anything that I'm willing to talk about is not a guilty pleasure for me. If something is a guilty pleasure for me, you're not going to get me to talk about it on this podcast. So, in conclusion, fuck you.
God.
Oh, God.
And fuck you for thinking we wouldn't get to this until Christmas. How dare you?
I was reading this.
Yes.
Three, you are both students at Toski Culinary Academy. Uh-oh. Two Shokugeki are going on at once. We're both involved as a team. As it is a dual competition, two prominent ingredients are to be featured. A carton of Jelly Belly Bean Boozled jelly beans and a box of assorted chocolates. Thankfully, the Shokugeki is for dessert, and you have a pantry of ingredients to choose from. How do you win the match?
I ask Nick to fake having a heart attack right when dishes are about to happen, and then I just pour all of the fucking yellow and white jelly beans or whatever they fucking made, and that's the one that's either buttered popcorn or rotten egg, and I don't, unless they're the luckiest motherfuckers on the planet, I just drop 14 buttered popcorns on their dish, they got one rotten egg, no one's gonna want to try anything else, and we win by default.
Wouldn't it be, shouldn't you have been putting black jelly beans on it, though? Because of the skunk spray?
No. The rotten egg was the worst flavor.
Oh, really?
That was the one that stayed. I still, when I taste certain mints, can taste the rotten egg in my mouth. Like, wow. it's just like a memory fucking connection because now.
You've washed your mouth out so much to get it out that now you associate it. Yeah,
it's oh, that thing was revolting. All right, so next question here. Dear Y Ruler of the Big Bad Beetleborgs.
Metallics.
And Space Cases T. I enjoy reading manga and many plot twists it have, like Natsu and Zeref being brothers, or the twist that came out of nowhere, like Blatsetsu's being the will of Kaguya. I wonder, what is your favorite and least favorite plot twist in manga?
Oh, well, that's a stupid plot twist, the one you named there. Blatsetsu being the will of Kaguya. We've already talked about assholes, so I think that we can...
I actually have a different answer for this one, though.
Oh, okay.
Because this one isn't an asshole. This was just a stupid plot twist. My favorite one is the 20th Century Boys Friends Identity one.
I was literally just thinking about that right before you said it. So.
Yeah, I've talked about that one a couple times, and especially in that episode. But for the worst one, there's a series I've read that I don't think I've talked about much on the show, but it's called Get Backers. And it's kind of like a battle-esque series. And there's an arc where essentially a lot of the main characters came from, like, this weird city, ghetto, super science place or whatever. It's where a lot of them got the weird powers they have. And they're going back there because there's, like, a villain who's threatening to set off a nuke there. And they form a six-person group. It's made up of the two main characters, like, the friendly rival character they have. This fourth character is kind of, like, someone they know and, you know, has been friendly with them. It's definitely an ally character, but... not one they've had much of a, you know, interaction with to this point. And then a female character who was originally an antagonist for them, but clearly has, like, a romantic relationship with Bond. And then the sixth character is a fucking dickhead. He is the villain. He is a shithead. He is the most untrustworthy fucking character in the group. And they go on this mission, and very early on, it's teased, like, there is a Judas amongst you. And they keep teasing, who could it be? And the entire time, I'm like, it's that one evil motherfucker in the group. The one person we have no reason not to trust.
It's like, let's see. Could it be James, Tim, Beverly, or Genghis Hitler?
All right, the character's name is Jekyll. He walks around in a black fucking trench coat, and he makes scalpels out of his blood. He is the most evil motherfucker who's trying to be edgy on the planet. And they gave you no reason to trust him. And for so long, they teased who was the Judas. And then fucking shocker, Nick, it was the one person everyone knew it was! It was so long, and it's where Rita's like, why are they still doing this? We all know who it is! And then when the reveal happens, it's like, of course it was!
You see, Ichigo, you should trust me. And that way, I know you've been suspecting me this whole time, but now you trust me. But I was actually into traitors!
It's so baffling.
I hated the Fullbringer twist. Ugh, stupid.
It is not a good thing.
Feel as if I should know the name of the person who sent us the next email, but it's not in the email anywhere. Oh gosh, I'm sure I'm forgetting it. I'm sorry. Anyhow, they decided not to give us names.
Yeah,
heresy. Which inspires a more negative reaction from you? Something boring, dull, slogging, or something you find offensive? Offensive. It depends, but, like, if it's something that really gets me down to my core, then I'll get angrier about that, as opposed to just if something is just boring. Because if something's boring, then I'm just going to be bored. I'm not going to be angry about it.
It depends on what they mean by offensive. Like, if it's something, like, that's just bad, and I find that if, like, I'm like, this was a bad plot, this was a stupid thing, like, that kind of offensive... I definitely would rather that to something boring, because I can at least laugh at something that's bad. Like, Chaotic Ruin... I found offensive at points, but I don't... I would definitely much rather read
that. At least you remember that.
Yeah, I'd rather read that than the countless series you've read that I can't even recall the name of because it was that forgettable of a series. But I would rather read those series again than read Wolf Guy. You know, something that I'm like, God, even talking about this, I'm going to have to put a trigger warning at the front.
Oh, and you guys all know how much I fucking love Usagi Drop, so...
Yeah. So it's something like that.
How angry I got about that.
Something like that, I'd prefer to read something boring. But if it's just something stupid, like if that's the difference between the two, I'd much rather read something that I can laugh at and remember for how stupid it was.
Next question. How do you define cliche? To me, a cliche is a trope that just used for the sake of using it and doesn't really work in the story, such as how a fairy tale uses friendship. A specific moment would be the arm thing with Laxus. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, cliche, to my knowledge of the definition, is, you know, a part of literature or, you know, any kind of media, I guess, specific to kind of the genre that's just overused to the point where it no longer captures the same sort of meaning. I think now we kind of associate just generally with tropes. But tropes, I mean, it's the reason there's also the trope of tropes aren't a bad thing. I think cliche in and of itself is meant to be more of a negative sort of term, because it's meant to mean this thing no longer has the punch it used to. But that comes down to execution within a series. Like, for example, I find fire powers in battle manga to be lame. Like, it's been done 1,000 times. And there are some times where it's still done in interesting ways. Like, I think One Piece used it in pretty interesting ways. Bleach, you know, Yamamoto just having, like, a wall of incinerating fire I thought was cool. But there's just, every series has a fire character. And 9 times out of 10, it tends to just be, I shoot fire blasts at you. Magna Swing, for example. Like, there's nothing really interesting about the way he uses fire powers.
There's a reason that eventually with the firebending and after, they're just like, and you can shoot lightning!
Yeah. It's just that case of, like, it's not interesting to me, but it doesn't mean if you put a character with fire powers in your series that they're worse for it, that I'm going to like them less, anything like that. The execution is still the most crucial part of all of it. So something that's common within the genre doesn't necessarily make it bad. Cliche, I think, is meant to refer more to those bad examples.
Mm-hmm. I'm mostly with you on that. I think that basically if you do a cliche and then you do it well, it kind of stops being a cliche. So. Mm-hmm. Next question. After watching Batman vs. Superman, I now completely understand your deep hatred of the Spider-Man manga. 2 questions spring from this. 1. Has there been a piece of media that helps you to understand why people or a person you know had a reaction to a different piece of media?
This isn't exactly in the same vein, but I would earnestly say that I think World Trigger helped me understand shipping a lot better. Like, I actually understand it now. Like, I understand why people are like, oh, I understand why you're devoted to these two characters who are fucking fictional, and you're like, they have to get together.
Seeing The Last Airbender by Shyamalan, I'm referencing Avatar a lot, but I guess I'm just kind of on that train, but seeing that movie helped me understand why people hate some movies as much as they do. Before that one, I didn't understand why people could get so worked up over movies. And then when I saw that, I totally got it. I fucking hated that movie so goddamn much. The person who was riding in the car with me on the way back home was kind of worried at some point I was going to crash the car because I was just gesturing around so wildly and angrily. So that one did definitely help me understand that.
And a lighter note, Amazing Spider-Man 2, when I went to see it, I finally understood why so many people were passionate about getting the Amazing Spider-Man in the MCU, because I saw how many kids were going to that movie in comparison to all the other superhero movies I saw. And I was like, oh, this is their hero. He's their hero. And that's why so many other people are passionate, because he was their hero when they were kids. So
yeah.
That's why I started to really trumpet, like, oh, I hope they get Spider-Man in the MCU so, you know, kids can get Spider-Man with the rest of the heroes in the universe.
That's really cool. One last question that also sprang to mind from the Spider-Man thing. Pick a manga and do something core.
Do something core to a character that would ruin them. Like having Spider-Man
something
playing
cruel, I guess?
Something that would change something to the core. Like, he uses the example of Spider-Man blaming God for Uncle Ben's death instead of taking responsibility on himself.
Mm.
So I have one. It's, have Naruto despise the people around him for the way they treat him, as opposed to wanting to endear himself to them. I think you could still do the same sort of series, but instead of having the series be about Naruto eventually earning their respect, it'd be a series about the rest of the characters learning that they were shitheads to him the entire time, and he was the one who was right all along about the way they should have treated him.
Mm.
And you have a much different series with a much less likable protagonist.
very cynical outlook as well.
Yeah.
I don't think I can top that.
you see why I'm glad I got to these notes now, right? Like, the last, like, 8 questions before this was just like, oh, no. Send it again in another email when I get time to read it.
Pokemon, if Ash was only concerned about getting stronger. I mean, they talk about, like, I want to be the very best and stuff like that, or I want to catch them all and so on and so forth. But, like, Ash is, like, a militant Pokemon trainer, like a power gamer.
Oh, yeah.
He has to do, like, EV training and stuff like that.
No fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be pretty annoying. We have more questions here from the same gentleman. He says, sorry, hit set by mistake. I'm not sure how to... You know when John Cena is in a submission and you know he's not tapping out. I know this is called something... The question is, when is it okay to judge something from a meta perspective? I think the term you're looking for is suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
When you're suddenly now aware that you're looking at something as a story as opposed to being invested in it. And that is entirely dependent on...
Holy shit, list. There's a comic where Peter Parker blames God for his uncle's death?
Apparently. There's a lot of stupid Spider-Man stories, though.
There are.
Yeah, it's entirely dependent. Some people have more harsh... sort of thresholds on what their suspension of disbelief is. Randy, good friend of mine, hey, every time Stan Lee shows up in a Marvel movie, he gets angry because he's like, I don't feel like I'm in the movie anymore. I suddenly realize I'm watching a Marvel movie because Stan Lee showed up on screen. So some people, they have more specific things than others.
Mm-hmm.
And here, a fun, dumb question. Alignments. Where do you think some of your manga characters fall on that chart?
So you're going to have to take the wheel on this one.
Yes. Instead of doing favorite characters and where they fall on the chart, because I realized that got pretty boring after a while, I tried to find a manga character that fit all of the traditional D&D alignment roles. And just like every alignment discussion from henceforward and that has come before this, this will be argued to death over a very pedantic argument that has no reason to happen.
All right. So we're going to have me sitting here judging you.
Yeah. While you so, Lawful Good, I put All Might.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's essentially Superman. Superman is the quintessential Lawful Good character.
Mm-hmm.
Neutral Good, I put Osamu. I think he doesn't always play exactly within the confines of the law, but he's always looking to do the good thing.
Honestly, I don't know if I would necessarily agree with that. I definitely get where you're coming from, but honestly... Yeah, I guess you're right. No, never mind. Go ahead.
Chaotic Good, Luffy. All the Straw Hats kind of fit into that. Lawful Neutral, I put Kizaru from One Piece. He's the one admiral that seemed to have the most neutral kind of alignment of the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought he was kind of the closest one to fit into that. True Neutral, I put Food Luck from Toriko. Because Food Luck, not necessarily a character, but Food Luck is not discriminant to good or evil. Good and bad people have food luck in Toriko.
Hmm.
And it seems to have a consciousness or will of itself if it's choosing people. This is where you're getting angry at me. Chaotic Neutral, I put Blackbeard. Because
I get that.
Yeah, he isn't... He's evil, but I don't think he does things for the sake of being evil. And I don't think he destroys things for the sake of being chaotic just because he can. I think he's just only interested in himself. And he'll do good and bad things for the sake of that.
Hmm.
Lawful Evil, I put Izami. Is all about kind of creating his system of order within Central and all that. Law Neutral Evil, I put Uwok, just because I was like, I guess he's the closest thing to just an evil motherfucker, but he's not about pure chaos.
Right.
And then Chaotic Evil, I have Acnologia. He's a tougher one, but I tried to think of the closest thing, and if he's truly just about kind of killing in the apocalypse, that seemed to be the closest fit I could find for just a pure chaotic evil kind of
thing. I would have said Acacia.
I guess. I just stopped thinking of Toriko characters eventually.
Alright. No, there's some good stuff there. I like that.
Okay. And he has the last question here about who's Gremmy's... if we had Gremmy's power, how would we beat Kenpachi?
You don't need to beat Kenpachi if you're Gremmy. Just put him in space.
Yeah. Essentially, you've covered it.
Like, there's the clarification, you can't just imagine him dead, because that's boring. You don't have to actually kill Kenpachi, though. Like, even if he survives the vacuum of space, you've put him in space.
He still has to get back to the Soul Society somehow, even if he could. You've just eliminated a threat.
It's a problem. Like, seriously.
And I mean, the dude opened up his fight against Yachiro by turning her fucking bones into cookies. I don't know why he didn't do that against Kenpachi.
This guy who can only use physical attacks is attacking me physically. I should do something to stop his physical attacks.
Like, I just turn his sword into fucking melted cheese. I turn his bones into fucking cookies and fill his blood with termites. Like, I just do that and he's just being eviscerated from the inside with his fucking cookie bones and his cheese sword. And they're like, why? And I'm like, because I have the power of imagination, and this is broken as shit! Right.
I think we gotta do one last one now, because I gotta start getting ready.
We'll move on, and we'll answer one last question here.
This is from Supernova RX. Hello, ex-Bleach lover, and Lord Von Quack.
Yay!
We know Mashiro is a Kamen Rider reference, so what other Kamen Rider references have you seen in anime? Well, there are many.
Yeah. There's probably more than I even realize.
There's more to even count. There's an entire thing with the Sentinels and Frank and Fran that I did a video with Juario a long time ago about. But anytime you see any superhero-inspired thing, there's going to be a Kamen Rider reference in there, if it's from Japan. What's your favorite Zanpakuto physical form? Fuck.
Can Shikai's count?
Yeah, I guess so. I actually got to be right back.
All right. I would say Ikaku. I actually liked his. I liked Zanpakuto's that, like, when they changed, they stopped just being swords, and they got, like, a cooler design. So I actually liked that Ikaku's became, like, a bow staff with, like, a blade at the end. I thought that was actually pretty sweet. Any of the swords that kind of changed their shape I thought were really cool, because I guess they were more memorable. So Kira's kind of like a three-pronged blade. That was pretty sweet, too. If you're just going off of pure Zanpakuto, though, I guess I kind of like the hilt guard on Byakuya's sword. It's pretty sweet, like the four-panel kind of thing. I don't know, hold on. Well, now I'm wondering if that means, like, the physical form is in the avatar representation. If that's the case, I have no fucking clue, because I only know the baboon thing for Renji and then whatever Ichigo's thing is, and I'm not even sure if that's Ichigo's thing anymore. I got so confused as to what that thing actually is. So I'm going to assume that you meant shape of the weapon, in which case you will go with the answers I just gave you. If you meant avatar, I totes love the baboon, because that is the only one I can remember. So I hope that suffices for your question. And last, how much did you hate Season 4 of the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Series? I'm not sure which season Season 4 was. I guess Season 1 would have been Duelist Kingdom. Season 2 would have been Battle City. Season 3 then, the Seal of Orichalcos. And then Season 4 was the Grand Prix. I never watched beyond the halfway into the Seal of Orichalcos, so I can't actually say what Season 4 was. Season 4 the Grand Prix, Nick? Or was Season 4
and that was pretty shitty.
I don't know. I stopped watching completely.
I think that it's Season 4. Let me see how they break it down.
Yeah, I'm not sure if after the filler arc became Season 3, because there was a pretty long time just spent in the semifinals.
This counts it as the Seal of Orichalcos.
Okay, if it's the Seal of Orichalcos, I watched a little bit into it, but I just lost interest. It came at a point when I was starting to get out of watching Saturday morning cartoons to begin with, and it just wasn't holding my interest all that much. I think it was the fact that, like, it just didn't feel... Like, I guess I liked the tournament aspect and, like, setting that the first two arcs had kind of had, and this one was just kind of, like, randomness, I'm going to fight you on a train kind of shit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are definitely some weak points to it, mostly in terms of, like, Darts isn't a very compelling villain. Nor is Imelda, I think is the name, the guy who goes after Kaiba. It's that one's just a straight up like Iron Man kind of plot. Raphael, I always thought was a really cool villain though. exposing the darker side of Yami Yugi. And he had a really cool gimmick in terms of he treasured his monsters so much that he kept them out of the graveyard at all costs because it was like he was keeping them alive. And then it completely turned that on its head when he went full dark side mode in the final duel he had with Yami. Baron, or Valen, however you want to anglicize it, had an interesting relationship with Mai. Mai got heavily involved in that arc, which was cool. But overall, I can absolutely see that why people don't like it. But it's not as bad as the Grand Prix arc, which is entirely pointless. And it only has literally one good moment, which is Kaiba completely fucking destroying the main villain.
Does he?
Basically, the guy, I think Siegfried is his name. He does this kind of... He, like, deliberately wants to get himself eliminated from the tournament. So he does. And then Kaiba, basically to make an example of him, duels him. And he launches this absurd combo, which involves him summoning 5 dragons at once and ramming them into this guy's battle-immune monster until it dies, and then he wins.
Yugi was so weird. It's not very sweet, though. Yeah. Part of me is like, I wonder if I should go back and finish Yu-Gi-Oh! The first series.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you've talked me out of it.
Alright.
With, like, that passive, like, I don't know. Like, it wasn't even, I don't know if it was fully the words, it's kind of just the sentiment of I don't know, and I was still enough to be like,
You can take it or leave it, I think.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think the idea of Yu-Gi-Oh! Honestly is more important than the first Yu-Gi-Oh! Series, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I getcha.
It's kind of like how we have fonder memories of Naruto than Naruto actually was because of how the good parts made us feel. Going back and experiencing the entire thing would probably not make us feel very good.
All right, do we want to finish it off there?
I kind of have to.
Right. That is going to do it, guys, for the weekly or monthly Q&A. Thank you all for watching.
Yeah.
You want to sign off, Nick?
Yes.
Goodbye, everybody.